from Illinois Public Media. This is the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. I want to begin with a brief programming note. Earlier this week, I mentioned we were planning to bring you an interview with Governor J.B. Pritzker today. I thought it was a fortuitous date, given that today is Statehood Day. Happy 207th birthday, Illinois. But that interview is not happening. We'd originally agreed to a half-hour conversation, but then the afternoon before it was scheduled to happen, the governor's people said he now had just 15 minutes, maybe 20. I don't think that's long enough for the kind of in-depth conversations we aspire to here, so I declined. Thanks to everyone who wrote in with comments and questions. We hope to have a conversation with the governor soon. For now, on with the show. This April, the Trump administration froze nearly $800 million in federal funding for Northwestern University in Evanston, Illinois. The school had already been under investigation by the government over claims of anti-Semitism and racial discrimination. The university had faced criticism ever since it made a deal last year with students protesting the Israel-Hamas war. In exchange for ending the demonstrations, the university agreed, among other things, to provide more support for Middle Eastern and North African and Muslim students. It also pledged to be more transparent about its investments. Northwestern has one of the highest shares of Jewish students in the country, more than 13% of undergrads, according to the student organization Hillel. And although Jewish people and Jewish organizations are divided on Israel and Palestine, some said that agreement represented a capitulation to protesters. But then, last week, Northwestern announced it had made another agreement, this time with the Trump administration. The university says it will pay $75 million to the federal government and make commitments to comply with Trump preferences in admissions, hiring, campus protest, and on trans health care. In exchange, the administration is dropping its investigations into the school and restoring federal funding. In a bit, we'll be joined by two professors who've been following this story closely, including one based at Northwestern. But we start with Bianca Kelantan, an education reporter at Politico who's been covering this. Bianca, welcome to the 21st Show. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Listeners, you can join the conversation today at 800-222-9455. What do you think of the Northwestern settlement? Do you think the Trump administration is potentially going to go after more schools in Illinois? And what do you think of the way higher education in general has responded to these threats during the second Trump administration? Again, 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. All right, Bianca, maybe go back in time for us a little bit. Talk more about how all this started for Northwestern.
Yeah, so this was really interesting because Northwestern was actually the first college outside of the Ivy League to be targeted by the Trump administration over anti-Semitism. They basically said that they were targeting the school over, you know, the sweeping protests that happened last year that were pro-Palestinian encampments. And so that Deering Meadow agreement that you mentioned in your rundown was actually really important and actually became the sole a major focus of the congressional hearing about a year ago, where former President Schill was really grilled on it for, you know, capitulating to protesters or making deals that shouldn't have happened. And so to see that in the agreement was really interesting. But I also think that, you know, Northwestern is the sixth college to make an agreement. It is the second highest payment made by a school to resolve federal probes, Columbia being the first. And so for a while, we saw this sort of weakening of these agreements where, like, Cornell, you know, a couple weeks before Northwestern was not as intense as this 12-page resolution agreement that Northwestern signed this week or last week.
Yeah. What are some of the other things? Because, you know, we've talked about this in the context of the Deering Meadow is, I believe, a location at Northwestern where the encampment was happening last year. But there were other things the Trump administration was complaining about. So what all were they investigating at Northwestern?
It was really full sweeping. And they've done this to a bunch of colleges, right? They want to know about your racial preferences in college admissions. Do you promote based on merit? And do you include race in your promotions of other professors or faculty? It was really sweeping and figuring that stuff out. And of course, these have been Trump priorities since day one. We've seen executive orders on these things. The other one, of course, is Title IX. They say transgender, you know, accommodations for transgender women on campus shouldn't happen. They shouldn't be allowed to use restrooms or facilities or play on sports teams that align with their gender identity. And so it really was this full launch of different probes. And like I said, several colleges have faced these probes. University of Virginia had them on racial discrimination not too long ago. Cornell had them for anti-Semitism. Brown, Penn, and you know, there's a list of 60 colleges that are still being investigated for anti-Semitism. But based off of this initial launch of probes over anti-Semitism on college campuses, you can't rule out that the Trump administration won't be looking at all these other things when making an agreement with a college in the future.
Yeah, so let's talk more about this agreement or settlement. As you mentioned, it's quite a lengthy document. It was pretty obviously written by lawyers. What's in it?
Well, there's a lot in it. So, of course, there's that $75 million that is meant to be paid over 3 years to the federal government. That's very similar to other agreements made. We saw $50 million being paid for technical programs by Brown, $221 million basically from Columbia being paid out. So that's something that we've seen consistently. In addition to that, though, we saw, you know, a lot of policies about upholding policies that Northwestern has already implemented since all this scrutiny sort of started on protests. So, you know, enforcing where and when you can have a protest on campus, whether or not you can wear a mask on campus. They also want to maintain policies and assurances that, you know, Northwestern is promoting based on merit and not based off of race or any other things. And same thing with admissions, that you're only considering merit. And it's really interesting that they want data from Northwestern about who is being admitted and who is being rejected, including, you know, statistics based on race, ethnicity, national origin, their grade point average. It's a lot of information that they're seeking. In addition to that, they want Northwestern to establish a special committee of the University Board of Trustees to oversee compliance with the agreement. And so it's quite a bit of it's very prescriptive as you go through it. And so Northwestern has all these things that they have to maintain in order to make sure that those probes can go away. Otherwise, you're going to see some more probes and investigations from the Trump administration if this isn't upheld.
Yeah, I'm looking here at the document in front of me, Section B, Item 21. It goes beyond just, you know, Northwestern will say, look, we do merit-based admission already. We're going to just maintain that. But they can't even have what are called proxies for racial admission, right? So it's kind of been a thing because of some Supreme Court decisions that, you know, this has been, you know, what we call affirmative action has been scaling back. But this is like, you can't even have personal statements or diversity narratives or any applicant reference to racial identity as a means to introduce or justify discrimination. They're really going hard here.
Yeah, and you know, it's really, these things that are included haven't even been included in that ruling, right? The Supreme Court ruling that overturned allowing, you know, some consideration of race in admissions, those aren't illegal. And so that's why when you hear a lot of criticism from people, it's they're going beyond what they are legally required to do just because they're facing this federal pressure.
And you also mentioned a number of provisions involving trans individuals, both in their sort of their place in everyday life on campus, as well as healthcare, because Northwestern, you know, if people are outside the area, they may not realize this is a huge medical provider in the Chicagoland area.
Yeah, so the School of Medicine will no longer be allowed to perform transgender surgeries, so things like mastectomies, vaginoplasties, but mostly just on minors. And so that was also based off of an executive order that President Trump signed earlier this year.
Which I think the university says it already doesn't do that on minors, really. Surgeries, anyway.
Of course, and that's what other colleges have said, too, because that was in Brown University's agreement as well.
So, what are your sort of big takeaways here, right? I mean, what do we understand why, or maybe the better question is, why do we understand Northwestern, and as some of these other universities have, as critics are saying, capitulated or made this agreement, seen the light, if somebody likes this agreement, they might say, you know, when Harvard, for example, is fighting back strongly.
I think early on, some of the people who were really supporting Harvard said, if Harvard can't stand up to the Trump administration, you know, the wealthiest, the oldest college in America, then other colleges really have no chance. And so I think when you look at the finances of certain colleges, you know, their stature, their alumni, some of them just can't afford to lose this cash. $790 million is a lot, let alone your other federal financial aid, right? That's federal cash, other things. And so colleges are really in this tough spot of having to decide, Do we just want to get the government off our back, or do we actually want to fight back? And so far, with the Harvard fight, we've seen them win. They won in the lower court. The federal judge ruled to give them back their $2.2 billion because it was legal what you did. UCLA, the faculty union there, decided to sue, and they won early. She said that you cannot threaten their federal funding. And so we're seeing this range of how colleges are responding. And it was really quick. I mean, I just worked on a timeline of this yesterday, actually, for my own work. And you saw this intensity in April, where everybody was getting these letters and these probes. And then all of a sudden, they started trickling down. It started with Columbia in July, and then it just kept going. And so I think we're going to see other colleges, depending on their resources and in which state they are in, stand up. But it really just depends on, I guess, the politics of your state and whether you have the funds to even fight back. And also whether there's just too much at stake, especially if you're a major research institution. You don't want to lose that fund. I talked to Mayor Biss of Evanston a couple months ago, and he told me, you know, he wanted Northwestern to fight back. He was very strong on that. But he also acknowledged that that's one of the biggest employers of the region, right? And so whatever happens to Northwestern happens to his city as well. So I think there's just a lot for colleges and college presidents to take into consideration when making these deals or fighting these deals.
Yeah, and in defense, I think I saw the Northwestern leader saying that, you know, you can't sort of make up time for lost scientific research if they have to really scrap some of the lab work and stuff like that that's happening, in his own view, at least. Bianca Kielantin covers education for Politico. Thanks so much for sharing your reporting with us today on the 21st Show.
Thanks so much for having me.
If you're just tuning in, we're talking about Northwestern University's settlement with the Trump administration over claims of discrimination, quote unquote. You can join the conversation by giving us a call at 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. I'd like to bring now on two additional guests. David A. Bateman is an associate professor of government at Cornell University and president of Cornell's chapter of the American Association of University Professors. Paul Gowder is a professor of law at Northwestern University. David, Paul, thanks for being with us.
Great to be here. Thank you.
Pleasure to be here.
Paul, I'm going to start with you for your top line reaction to this settlement.
So I think the thing that we have to remember when we evaluate whether settlements like this are a good idea or a bad idea is that the Trump administration is fundamentally a bad faith actor. I'm just going to be perfectly frank about that. You know, with respect to Northwestern, they never actually sent the university a formal charge or any description of the alleged discrimination that occurred. And this agreement gives the administration numerous pretexts to gin up additional complaints of discrimination. And so the real worry that I think everybody at Northwestern should have about this agreement is the first time they send statistical data about admissions, somebody in the Department of Education is going to say, oh, you have too many students of color, you must secretly be doing affirmative action, we're going to take your research funds away. Or, oh, this climate survey that you're required to conduct, somebody complained about something, you must be doing anti-Semitism, we're going to take your research funds away again, and the university is just going to be back at square zero.
David Bateman, what's your top line reaction to this agreement? Maybe we should mention Cornell had its own agreement with the Trump administration, as we heard.
So my top line reaction is very similar to Paul's, that this is not really about Title VI. It's not about anti-Semitism. It's not even about the conflation of anti-Semitism with opposition to Israel, that this is really part of a larger coercive effort by the Trump administration to go after universities more generally. And we know that because they are not following what the law requires for Title VI. There is a process laid out in Title VI. They chose not to follow it. Instead, they engaged in unlawful, coercive funding cutoffs to achieve through coercion what they cannot achieve through legislation, through the regular administrative process, or even through actual litigation, by, as Paul suggests, by presenting claims that we violated the law in any way. It is the case, having gone over the Northwestern Agreement and the Cornell Agreement, that while both of these agreements are bad, and they are bad for the reasons Paul suggested, that the Trump administration is a fundamentally bad faith actor. So entering into any of these agreements is in some sense a bad move. That the Northwestern Agreement is in some ways much worse. And so I think the issues that Bianca raised about explaining differences across universities is very important. She got at some of that.
Yeah, well, let me ask you to pause on that, because we need to take a break on the program. We're on a fixed clock, so I think that's a good sort of setup for where we'll come back to you after this break. If you want to join us today, we're talking about the settlement at Northwestern, and we're going to compare and contrast to what other universities have done with the Trump administration. 800-222-9455 is the number if you want to join us today. 800-222-9455. This is The 21st Show. Stay with us.
Support for the 21st Show comes from the Des Moines Arts Center, presenting Manuel Alvarez Bravo, a pioneer of Mexican photography, featuring collaborators like Frida Kahlo, Diego Rivera, and more. On view through January 18th. More information at DesMoinesArtsCenter.org.
It's the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. If you're just joining us, we're talking about Northwestern University's settlement with the Trump administration, ostensibly over claims of discrimination and admissions, and as well as anti-Semitism, tolerance of that on campus. We're going to get into more about how realistic those claims were. But the university has agreed to pay $75 million to the federal government, and it's made commitments to comply with Trump administration preferences in admissions, hiring, campus protest rules, even trans health care and other areas. And in exchange, the administration is dropping its investigations into the school and restoring $790 million in federal funding. President Trump has called Northwestern's policies woke, and the U.S. Education Department accused the school of not protecting Jewish students, offering uninterrupted access to campus facilities and educational opportunities during protests over Israel's war in Gaza. Attorney General Pam Bondi said the settlement protects Jewish students and puts merit first, but in a statement, Northwestern's interim president, Harry Beenin, said the payment is not an admission of guilt. And the school's chapter of Jewish Voice for Peace, for example, pushed back on Northwestern's decision, writing, "This deal is an assault on freedom of speech and the right to protest and will endanger many in our community." I also want to note, Governor J.B. Pritzker has some fairly significant ties to some of the institutions we've been talking about today. He's an alum of Northwestern's law school. 10 years ago, he and First Lady M.K. Pritzker gave $100 million to the school, which is now called the Pritzker School of Law. Beyond that, his sister, former Commerce Secretary Penny Pritzker, is senior fellow of the Harvard Corporation, essentially the chair of the Board of Trustees. And as we mentioned earlier, Harvard is one of the few Trump-targeted universities putting up a fight. Anyway, Governor Pritzker was asked about this by reporters yesterday.
Every time a university signs an agreement based upon this extortion, they're whittling away just a little bit at the democracy that I think we've all relied upon.
We're talking about this with Paul Gowder, a professor of law at Northwestern's Pritzker Law School, and also with us, David Bateman, associate professor of government at Cornell University and the president of Cornell's chapter of the American Association of University Professors. So, David, I want to come back to you because you were, before the break, we were talking about comparing what is in Northwestern's settlement with what some other schools have done, including Cornell, and I'll let you take it from there.
So Cornell and Northwestern have a similarity of a sort of boilerplate about academic freedom being protected, while all the substance of the agreement sort of goes in exactly the opposite way. But Northwestern's goes well beyond the Cornell agreements in really intruding in a profound way into policy and processes at Northwestern. Right? The requirement for active police cooperation with when Northwestern policies are being violated, that it requires a repeal of the Deering Meadow agreement, that it requires DOJ approval if earlier policy changes are going to be revised, right? So Northwestern is losing for the term of this agreement its ability to regulate, govern its campus as it sees fit. It also creates a new body, a new centralization form of special committee of trustees, totally removed from faculty governance, the structures that are essential to the university and to academic freedom. And it does so in order to ensure that the agreement will be complied with, so that there's a new mechanism, the Northwestern agreement, for ensuring compliance with the agreement beyond the existing faculty governing structures. There is also the restrictions on gender-affirming care for those under 18. This goes well beyond not just the Northwestern community, but the entirety of people at the Feinberg School. And so it goes, in many ways, it's much more intrusive than what even Cornell had to suffer through.
Let me invite our listeners to join us today at 800-222-9455. And I'll also share an email we got from Terry, who's listening in Bettendorf, Iowa. Says, I don't know what can be done to stop the Trump incursions. It's a disaster for our great university system. Trump is not sincere in fighting anti-Semitism. It's just an excuse to control our universities. If we ever get rid of this administration, we need to pass laws that will protect the universities. The laws must have enforcement mechanisms. Thanks for that message, Terry. If you want to join us again, 800-222-9455. Paul Gauder, what do you think about that? David says Northwestern's agreement goes much farther than some of the other schools have done and is putting itself in future peril here.
I completely agree with that. I mean, you have to understand that, first of all, there was no evidence whatsoever that the university actually violated any anti-discrimination laws. In fact, not only was there no evidence of that, as I mentioned, there was no formal charge. So the Trump administration has never actually said in what way Northwestern supposedly violated anti-discrimination laws in the first place. The closest thing that we can glean from that agreement is that they thought that the Deering Meadow agreement somehow violated anti-discrimination laws. But essentially, the only colorable idea in that agreement that could even arguably be in tension with anti-discrimination laws is the promise to host Palestinian visiting scholars. But universities promise to host visiting scholars from particular countries all the time. You know, in fact, the university has agreements to host visiting scholars with several Israeli universities as well. And so that can't be the real issue. And so I think that when you see this combination of no genuine claim of discrimination in advance, combined with these incredibly intrusive requirements for scrutiny of admissions, for control over, as David pointed out, how the university addresses student protests, you can see that what's really going on is a bid for control, and a bid for control that the university really shamefully and embarrassingly decided to just fold under.
Pull on that thread for me. A bid for control to what end?
Because so here's the deep story here, and I'm going to be really blunt with you. The Trump administration has authoritarian ambitions. We have seen this in numerous respects. We've seen it in the egregious abuses of its immigration enforcement authority. We've seen it in the war crimes that it's committing in the Caribbean. We've seen it in the attacks on law firms and journalists, the brief successful effort to get Jimmy Kimmel fired, all of these things we've seen. And the thing about authoritarianism is that it doesn't work with government resources alone. You always have to co-opt civil society. You have to co-opt big institutions to participate in a project of authoritarianism. Student protests in particular are scary to governments that want power. You know, students tend to be really active. Students tend to be really smart. Students tend to be really passionate about the things that they care about. And so repressing campus protests is something that a regime that wants to claim more power than it's entitled to is gonna want to do. And this agreement attempts to co-opt Northwestern to repress student protests, as well as to repress the ambitions of transgender folks, to repress the movement for racial equality in the economy.
Let me remind listeners, this is the 21st show. We're talking about Northwestern's settlement with the Trump administration. My guests are Paul Gowder, a professor of law at Northwestern's Pritzker Law School, and David Bateman, associate professor of government at Cornell University, which also had its own agreement with the Trump administration. He's president as well as he is also president of Cornell's chapter of the American Association of University Professors. I should say we did reach out to Hillel at a Jewish student organization that praised this agreement in public statements, but couldn't join because of scheduling today. David, let me come back to you. What do you think of what Paul was saying there about the sort of deeper aims of what the Trump administration is trying to do here?
So Paul is entirely right on this. So my academic work is primarily in the area of democracy and democratic backsliding, as well as authoritarianism, sort of with a look at the United States, but also elsewhere. And what Paul describes is the authoritarian playbook of co-opting civil society and intruding into civil society and using that ultimately to ensure their capacity to consolidate power and to win elections. Right? You don't even need to rig the election. You generate the strong support within civil society to do the work for you. Now, this is a clear part of the authoritarian playbook, and this is clearly what Trump is up to. And going after universities is part of that. So there was a great article by Elizabeth Hurd on the Northwestern agreement, and she quotes now President J.D. Vance from 2021, saying that we have to honestly and aggressively attack the universities in this country. Universities are portrayed as an enemy. And part of this is because of the unique spaces that universities provide. They are places in which open inquiry is sort of at the heart. Dissent, freedom, boisterousness, right? These are unique spaces in American life. And the far right in this country has long sought to suppress them. But they're also sort of central pillars of civil society in this country. And as Paul points out, that's exactly what authoritarians do, is they go after civil society.
And yet, right? And I'm deeply sympathetic to some of these arguments because as somebody who works in public media in particular, which has been defunded by the Trump administration this year, I am experiencing that as well myself. And, you know, and I've talked about this with other guests, this idea about this broader assault on fact-based institutions in American right in America, right? Like law, government, higher education, and the media. But I do wonder, and Paul, I'll come back to you. You know, there were, I think, some genuine accounts of Jewish students feeling quite uncomfortable with some of the rhetoric used at the protests. Is there any sense in sort of balancing what's happening here? Or, again, are you thinking this is just all pretense?
Well, so let me be perfectly clear. Anti-Semitism is terrible. The university obviously is obliged both legally and morally to refrain from discrimination against Jewish students. However, accusing somebody of a violation of anti-discrimination law requires evidence, and it requires giving them an opportunity to defend themselves. You know, and it also requires precision. Like, part of the reason that we need evidence and an opportunity to defend yourself before you accuse somebody of violating anti-discrimination law is because when it's just this sort of free-floating, oh, somebody was mad about the war in Palestine, therefore there's discrimination, therefore there's anti-Semitism, it leaves off the kind of precision that you need to understand the difference between free speech, between fair criticism and actual anti-Semitism, right? So, you know, I'll give you an example. You know, in other universities, some students were accused of creating areas of campus that they didn't let Jewish students into. As far as I know, nobody ever accused Northwestern of having anything like that. I could be mistaken, but I don't think so. That would clearly be unacceptable anti-Semitism, right? That's unacceptable. If Northwestern allowed that, then yes, Northwestern ought to be punished. But again, you need evidence for that. On the other hand, harsh criticism of Israel, harsh criticism of the idea of a state founded on ethnicity, those are not anti-Semitic. That's not against being Jewish. That's not against Judaism. It's a political view about the appropriateness of a government's behavior and an appropriateness of the basis of constructing states. And so it may be the case that some students who believe that, you know, Israel is an important part of their faith or their identity find those views upsetting, but that doesn't make those views anti-Semitic. And so the advantage of doing a real legal process where you actually have an accusation of discrimination with evidence is that it would have allowed the government to tease out whether real anti-Semitism or just a disagreement had happened.
We're running short on time, and in the few minutes we have remaining, David, I want to come back to you and this idea of civil society and some of the assaults. Is there a playbook? You know, we've seen things like this happening in Hungary, in Russia. Is there a playbook for turning the tide?
So this is a big question in the area that I work. There's no great playbook. It's very difficult to actually turn the tide, but it can be done. It's difficult in part because a lot of people don't really believe that it's authoritarianism. They see all these sort of norm violations. They see, in this case, the weaponization of civil rights law in the way that Paul highlighted, sort of the erasure of distinctions and the precision that's actually required through law to just go straight to the coercive capacities that that law might provide. We recognize these things, but it's tough really for people to grapple with the idea that this means that there is a regime change underway. The regimes, however, take a while to consolidate, and the United States is in a relatively lucky position relative to other backsliding countries. In Hungary, Orban was extremely popular. In Turkey, Erdogan was very popular. They had broad popular support. They could win very large majorities in parliament. They could have very strong powers associated with the president in the case of Turkey. They could achieve these things. In the United States, Trump is very unpopular. And so the first line of rolling back the authoritarian playbook here and rolling back an attempt at authoritarian consolidation is to use the remaining civil society election opportunities while we have them in order to prevent the authoritarians from continuing to hold power and to be able to consolidate. That's the best part of the playbook. The playbook, ultimately, there's no great way, there's no great options, but elections matter. Civil society matters. That's why authoritarians are going after it, and that's why making sure civil society organizations hold the line. When faculty votes 594-4 at Northwestern to oppose any to oppose the types of capitulations of the Trump administration, that's a type of holding the line, forcing that at every stage, making it harder and harder for the authoritarians to continue in this vein. That is how you roll it back.
All right, we're going to have to leave it there. David Bateman is a professor at Cornell University and president of Cornell's chapter of the American Association of University Professors. Paul Gauder is a professor of law at Northwestern's Pritzker School of Law. Thank you both so much for being with us and sharing your perspectives with us today on the 21st Show. Coming up after the break, we're going to be hearing from singer-songwriter Cassandra Jenkins, who has a song about a time she was effectively imprisoned by COVID in Aurora, Illinois. This is the 21st Show. Stay with us.